Almost. I almost had it.
Yeah, I can't I even whistle.
You can't?
No, I can't. I've never... That's how my whistling sounds.
Pathetic. Welcome to Heterodorks.
Hello,
my name is... What? Oh.
We say hello, TERFs and trannies.
You're right.
Corey.
Yeah, we've got this whole thing screwed up. I'm the tranny, Corinna Cohn, and I have a lot of enemies in the trans community because I talk about these topics realistically.
And I'm Nina Paley, a canceled artist who in 2017, I think I said on Facebook that women don't have penises, and I've been canceled ever
Some
since.
Some do, Nina.
No. No, they do not. Women do not have penises. Yeah, so I'm all up in the culture wars now. And we have a special guest today. Her name is Jay Burns. She is based in the San Francisco Bay Area. And notably, she organized an art show that got vandalized. Can you talk about that a little bit? Welcome, Jay.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Welcome.
I just have to confess right off that I'm huge fans of yours, and I've been listening to the podcast since almost the first one.
Hey, awesome. You're one of our eight listeners.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of our eight listeners died recently, so it's great that you're alive. I mean, for other reasons, too.
Actually, when I met some TERFs in real life for the first time at the Dana Rivers trial, I knew they were okay because they all listened to your podcast too. So it was sort of like you know Heterodorks? Oh, cool. You're one of us. Like, so probably didn't know that, but you were talked about at the Dana Rivers trial by the attendees.
Sweet. We're a shibboleth.
I organized an art show of 14, turned out to be 14 women artists that have been canceled in some form or another, suffered some sort of career loss through speaking out about the, you know, definition of women, or, you know, men can't be women, and varying degrees of cancellation. It started mostly because I do collect art, and as I became aware of this issue, I was looking for the artists that were talking about this issue, because in general, my experience has always been that artists are the ones on, like, the vanguard, the forefront of thinking about sort of controversial issues. I couldn't find any originally. I was like, where are they all? And then as I became deeper into the community, I realized, oh, they're being canceled. And then I started thinking, well, I'll buy art from every artist that I hear of being canceled. That'll be like my way of supporting them. And from there sort of formed this idea when I heard that WDI was possibly going to have their conference in San Francisco. I thought I could have an art show. I thought it would be really cool. Like, this art show of women artists that have been silenced and canceled. So that's how it evolved.
Yeah, it's a great idea. For listeners who don't know, WDI stands for Women's Declaration International.
Right, a built-in audience for the art show. Because I was like, well, if I have an art show, how am I going to promote it? It will probably be canceled. How will I have anyone attend it? And the only way I could think of is, well, we're having this conference in the Bay Area. This is a built-in audience for an art show. And I feel that in this movement, or whatever you want to call it, art is not as important as it is in some other movements. And I think that's because artists have been silenced. And you don't see as much art on the GC side. Or there is art there, yeah. But it's not like, I don't know. It's just, I think so many artists have been silenced. I know there's so much more creativity and juice possible
you really have to have a thick hide to be able to stand up to all the criticism you get. Because every time I see an artist who says anything, even what was her name, the singer recently?
Roisin. Roisin Murphy.
Murphy. Yeah.
Said just something completely anodyne and was jumped all over. And in fact, suffered professional consequences from it, because even though she was getting very good reviews, all the reviews chipped in and said, well, you know, this is great music, but only listen to it if you have to.
So that happened right around the time I was putting up the sign. We put a sign in the front of the gallery saying a partial list of all the platforms that have silenced or canceled the women. And I just made Hit Parade, her album, sort of the unofficial soundtrack for the installation. So we listened to that album probably, I don't know, like 16 times while we were installing the art. I felt like it was appropriate. I was trying to support her, and also it turns out to be an amazing album. So,
how did you find a venue for the show?
The bad news is that San Francisco real estate is not doing well. The good news is that means there's a lot of empty storefronts. And there's a history in San Francisco of doing pop-ups and empty storefronts. I try to activate the space, have a little art show. I have friends who've done pop-ups in different places. So I pitched it to the real estate agent as a pop-up. And I found, it is a pop-up, in fact. I found a venue like 250 feet from the hotel entrance, and it was beautiful. It had this huge, huge, like high ceilings, big flat wall. So it was perfect for the gallery. It actually would make a great gallery if it was possible for me to start a gallery. But yeah, it's a wonderful space. I showed a few of my friends who are artists who are sort of on the down low with this, and they were just like, oh my God, this is an amazing space. So,
and did
just
you
lucked into it.
Did you have to, I mean, you had to tell them that they might risk attack, right?
Well, I told them the truth. So I said, you know, I'm interested in doing a feminist art show in connection with a conference that will be held at the Hilton. I gave them the name of the conference. But as soon as I said feminist, the real estate agent was just like, okay. Like, he did not listen to anything else after I said that. I was like, I'm going to do a feminist art show in conjunction with the conference at the Hilton. And then he was fine with it.
Wow. What do you attribute that?
I just think he heard the word feminist and thought, okay, something to do with women and I'm not that interested. Sure, you can have the space. That's the vibe I got. But
Was it maybe like the way trans unlocks every door now? Maybe it was something like that. Like, he was scared to ask any questions because, you know, he'd get Me Too'd.
He just seemed excited because that space had been empty for over 4 years. Oh. So I don't know if there was much thought about it. I think he just heard that it was going to be a pop-up gallery and that was fine.
Oh,
and
nice.
I was willing to pay. So.
Well, thank you, Mr. Real Estate Agent.
Yeah. Have you talked to him since? Like, when he saw the photos of the space?
No, but the landlord is not happy with me for sure. I was hoping to extend the art show, but I don't think that'll be possible. Although I did clean up the graffiti.
Tell us about the graffiti. How long was the show even open before the graffiti hit?
Well, interestingly enough, I put the sign up, and so I wasn't being quiet about it. I put the list of canceled platforms. I put a poster saying, talking about the show in the window. And I had a lot of positive interactions with pedestrians, and it's a very busy area. People were really excited to see anything there since it had been empty for so long, and people were excited to see a show. It said exactly what the show is about, the art of dissident feminists, but I don't think they realized the full implication of it. Then we opened the Saturday of WDI, which was I did not know that there was going to be all these protests. The first WDI conference in DC had zero protests, their first annual conference last September. So this, I did not, I mean, I just didn't know. So Saturday was nuts. The whole day I thought we were not going to be able to open. There were, at the height of the protest, maybe over 100 people. They were blocking intersections. They were damaging the sign. They punched the hotel manager. They held signs saying like a million dead TERFs. I did not think we were going to get 100 women from the front of the hotel, 250 feet to the gallery opening. I wasn't going to risk anyone's life or, you know, bodily injury. I did in advance, when I heard the protests were going to happen, about a few days before, I hired 2 security guards to help escort the women just in case. But obviously, if there's 60 people out there, we're still not going to do it. By the time the show opening, that was 7 p.m., there were 6 protesters left. And we deemed it was safe. And I had these 2 wonderful security guards, one stationed at the front of the gallery and one escorting women back and forth from the hotel. Mm. And we had over 100, probably, and we had some local people that didn't go to the conference. It was open to men and women, so there were men there. Probably upwards of like 150 people total over the 2 hours. It was a great event. We had no problem. The five or six protesters that were outside the hotel, they followed us a little bit down the block, but then they stopped and just held signs during the event. And I think there was just enough of us, and there were the 2 security guards, that nothing happened during the event, which to me was a huge success. That's all I wanted to have. I just like wanted to have this art show, put a stake in the ground. We did the art show. We did have some journalists come, but, you know, obviously I tried to get local journalists interested, like the San Francisco Chronicle or KTVU News, and none of them were interested in covering it. Then we closed up around 9:15 p.m. There were maybe 6 of us that helped close up, and then we walked back to the hotel and went to the hotel bar, and there were maybe 20 of us in the hotel bar. And this is in San Francisco, where there are delightful bars a block away in North Beach. There's so many more places to go. The only reason you would be in that hotel bar is because you're staying in the hotel and right, not feeling safe going out. So we were all there, and I would say a little after 10:30 or so, the protesters from outside came in for a drink, which was bizarre. So they came in carrying their signs that said, "I eat TERFs for breakfast and no TERFs on our turf." Just walked in with their signs, sat down, and had a drink.
You know, that protester who eats TERFs for breakfast, I bet that's where the million dead TERFs come from.
Maybe so. I mean, that's a lot of TERFs. Well, that's
TERF sausage, TERF bacon.
That sign was so confusing to me. I'm like, are you saying that a million TERFs have existed in the world and died, or that a million TERFs are going to die? Like, it was not, there was no verb there. So, and also yeah, they always say how small our movement is. So I'm like, well, there's a million of us. That's pretty good. Like,
well, if we're looking at the world population, though, I think we've got something like 7.9 billion TERFs.
Right, exactly, right. We have multiple billion TERFs for sure.
Yeah.
So they came in, had a drink. There were actually some pleasant interactions. You know, a lot of us are moms and just very unassuming, not very aggressive looking people. And like approached them. I didn't talk to them, but I had one mom approached them and just said, you know, I really liked your playlist that you were playing out there. You know, it just reminded me of being a mom of like teenage boys. You're like, I really liked your playlist. It was great. And I think they had just like no idea how to deal with that. Somebody did try to, was recording them, just was worried there was going to be some sort of violence. And they were upset by that. But other than that, it was very pleasant. And then they left eventually. And I think that's when they, you know, possibly the vandalism happened. But I don't know. At some point, the vandalism happened between sort of like 9:15 p.m. and like 8 a.m. the following morning.
What did they put on the door?
So in huge letters, like all over the glass doors, 8 feet tall, it says no turfs on our turf with a anarchy symbol. Mm. And then they tried to get rid of the sign that I had put up that said all the platforms. It says the following platforms, you know, don't want you to see this show. And then it was all these like tech platforms like Etsy, Instagram, Pinterest, and then a few
Indiegogo.
Indiegogo, right? Then there were a few museums like University of Arts, London, and some other associations like the Craft Potters Association. Anyway, I always thought that was confusing that they crossed that out and then they were also anarchists, because I was like, so do they want us to not know that these corporations don't want you to see the show? I mean, I would assume if you're an anarchist that you'd be against these corporations, but whatever. They crossed that sign out too. And they posted it on indiebay.org, which is a site for the Bay Area that you can post your actions. So they posted an action about how they had defaced our gallery. And they said that they had used blood red for the blood of all of the trans people that have been killed by our rhetoric and our art. However, it was clearly hot pink that they used.
Oh, so no, that's right, though, because the trans femmes bleed pink.
Oh, right. Okay. Because I was like, blood red, hot pink. I think there's a color difference there, but maybe they just had the wrong spray can, or I don't know.
Yeah, it's the color is not blood red. It's trans blood red.
Yes, trans blood red, which is pink. So I was, you know, I was expecting possibly some blowback, but I'm surprised that actually it feels bad when people don't like you. Really feels bad. It's an effective strategy. I was like, oh, I feel bad. But then it was, of course, some of the women staying in the hotel took some fun pictures in front of it. And I think we made light of the fact that I took some pictures. I tried to, you know, spread it over my Twitter and get some people interested in the vandalism. But at first, the neighbors were in support. I mean, they were just sad to see it vandalized because they were excited to have a gallery there after being empty for so many years. But I think when they realized what the graffiti said, then things became a little less pleasant. But I was nothing directly was said to me, and I did remove the graffiti by Monday afternoon. So we discovered it Sunday morning, and the city has a code. Like, if you don't remove your graffiti, you can be fined daily. So we removed it by Monday afternoon.
Is it not disgraceful that people do not stand up for victims of this sort of thing? Or they don't stand up for free speech. I cannot believe how bad it's gotten. Not just that you have the bullies doing this, but all of the all these existing galleries should have stood up to this years ago. And just like now your neighbors are, or whatever the space's neighbors are scared of the bully. It's like they blame it. Like they resent the victims.
Right. They first were sympathetic, but almost, and this is me, I don't have any proof, but it felt like at some point it was like, oh, you have cooties. Like you, wait a second. This isn't like, you're not an innocent victim. But I can't say for sure, obviously. I mean, interestingly enough, there's one of the artists in the show, Claudia Clare, does a lot of work around sex work abolition, and I mean, a lot of her art references that. And there's a massage parlor right next door to the gallery that is open like very, very late and only admits men. And there's nobody protesting that. In fact, the artist that installed the sign about the platforms was sexually assaulted by a person who was trying to use the massage parlor, was not let in, so clearly they knew he was a creep. He went around and he sexually assaulted the artist installing the sign. So the fact that there's this happening in the neighborhood and nobody cares about that, but then I have an art gallery and somebody graffitis it because they don't like women talking about who they are, their own problems. And now I'm the problem, not the massage parlor next door. So anyway, that's.
Yeah, it's weird to live in a time where you can see that violent bullying or terrorism works. Like my whole life growing up in the US and being an adult in the US, this was not supposed to work. And
yes,
it works now.
I think I've been thinking a lot about why, because I'm not an artist myself. I have no artistic talent. I'm not, I really enjoy artists. They think completely differently from me. And I, you know, I come from sort of the STEM background. And so I like love art. I'm a collector, an appreciative. I don't have any creative juice in me in terms of visual art. Why do I care? Why did I get involved in this? And I think part of it has to do with when I was 10, there was a bombing of a bookstore in near where I lived in Berkeley because of the Satanic Verses by Salman Rushdie. And my mother, who was not a big reader, I mean, we probably had 5 books in our house. Like 3 of them were like Ken Follett books, which was sort of like a trash writer of the 80s. Now, historical fiction. Anyway, I remember she ordered the book and we went to the bookstore and they had the books behind the counter and it was this big deal that she got the book. And I just remember thinking, I remember being really proud of my mother that she had heard about this bombing and had decided to go buy the book and support the writer, even though she's not a big reader. It doesn't seem like that's what's occurring now in our culture. But that was a foundational memory for me, I think, around like free speech and art was that bombing of that bookstore. So,
well, good for your mother.
Yes.
Yeah, and good for you. You're a real upstander.
Well, I don't know.
In this world, yes, you are.
I know. Nina knows.
Yeah, it's so rare. I'm so hungry for courage these days because cowardice is everywhere.
It's really hard living in the Bay Area right now and having these views. I think that's why we have.
What do you mean these views? Just simply.
Oh, just that, you know, women can't be men. Just that. Men can't be women. Women deserve single-sex spaces in locker rooms, prisons, shelters, sports.
I didn't hear you say anything about trans people should be erased or exterminated.
Oh, no. Yeah. So my website, Women Are Reals, has a very simple, clear statement. We think women deserve dignity and safety in sports, locker rooms, prisons, and shelters. And when anyone can self-identify into women-only spaces, these spaces are no longer single-sex. And trans-identified people must have civil rights, such as protection from housing and employment discrimination. But those rights do not need to come at a cost to women's safety and dignity. So that's our very simple mission statement or philosophy. And our group is nonpartisan, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, Green Party, Peace and Freedom.
Oh, but not libertarians.
Oh, I do. We do have a libertarian. Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, never mind.
Sorry.
They're inclusive, Karina. Don't worry.
I was going to get indignant about my minority status.
We just did a recent survey. So I have all this data about, because basically every time we do any action or do anything and the press reports on it, they always call us anti-trans, right-wing. And I'm like, okay, fine. I'm just going to collect data from our members. And then every time someone posts something about it, I'm going to post on Twitter, like, here's our demographics. So like 65% of us are Democrats. 50% of us are same-sex attracted. 55% of us are mothers, and 56% of us are former athletes. So that's kind of the group that we have. And I think the reason we're so tight-knit is it's so hard to be in the Bay Area right now and have thoughts about men being in your spa or your locker room or prisons. It creates a tight-knit community of women. And we have to be very careful, like where we meet, where we talk about things, who we talk about things with. it's not my, I, you know, like my son, I have a teenager and he has become full on TERF, and because he's very philosophical and logical. And we had I went on like 3 or 4 long hikes with him and we just talked about the issue and he saw where I was coming from. But now I've created this dissonance in his life where he has to go to school every day and keep his mouth shut about this issue for fear of basically being rejected by the entire high school. So I've saved my son possibly from going down a road that I was worried about, but now I've created a situation where he is having to keep secrets from his biology teacher. Said the other day, she said, humans are slightly sexually dimorphic, is what she said.
Oh.
Yes.
What does dimorphic mean?
But then later in the later in the lecture, she said that gender determines your life expectancy. And my
No, that's true, because if you try to change it, you die young.
That's true.
That you're genocided, because the moment you're misgendered, you die.
Yeah.
So my son was like, I wanted to raise my hand and say, don't you mean sex determines your life expectancy? But then he felt like he couldn't do that. He was worried about the consequences. And so that's the situation that my son is in every day.
That was a biology class.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And humans are slightly sexually dimorphic.
Slightly.
Yeah. And watching, I sort of came to this understanding of what's happening with this issue a couple years ago before it hit my son's friend group. So I came from a philosophical perspective before it hit my real life. And watching all of the cliches come true, just everything you read about, just everything. It hit the high school when it hit about a year ago. It spread through the entire school like wildfire. Out of my son's 6 friends, 2 of them are now trans just in the last 6 months. So watching it, you read about it, you hear about it, you read stories about it, and then you're like, oh, it's happening here. It's happening to my son's friends. Oh, it's happening to all my friends from college. Like, it just feels like my entire life is gender now.
It sounds fairly recent that this has hit your area. Like, it hit my area in, I would say, 2018 was real big here.
In the high schools, Nina?
Yeah, in schools. Yeah.
I think it hit schools in waves. It wasn't like there weren't any trans kids at my son's school, but they were a little bit older. And I think there's just like a wave, like you watch it just takes a group. So what happened is about 5 or 6 trans identified kids came in 9th grade, already trans. And when that happened, my son was in 10th grade and it just spread. And I think it's like a wave. So now that wave will go and then it'll be like another wave. So it's not that it hasn't been here for years. It's just that I personally witnessed the wave happen. Like, oh, nobody's trans in my son's friends group, and now 2 are in the last 6 months. And for different reasons, both of them for different reasons, but
are they male or female friends?
Male.
They're male friends. And are they identifying as women or as non-binaries?
Women. There's a lot of non-binaries too, but those 2 are women. Mm. Yes. And 1 is gay and went through a breakup.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know anything beyond that. But just that he had his first relationship, went through a breakup. There you go. That happened. And the other one is a really shy kid on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. The ones that you'd pick out and say, I bet those 2.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are they in sports at all?
No. Not that I know of. I don't want to go into too many details, but I also work with a lot of trans-identified young people in their 20s. Mm. So I've personally witnessed several young women.
So you're a barista.
Several young women, cut their breasts off, and that was really sad to me watching it. I have a maternal instinct, so it was hard.
Yeah, I don't have a maternal instinct, but it's hard for me too.
Yeah, it's not fun to watch someone mutilate themselves and then not really be able to talk about it.
I keep having people tell me I should cut my breasts off, so it's hard for me too.
So yeah, so that's...
Sorry, that was awkward.
No.
How do you segue out of that?
I don't know.
We have another episode about that. We do need to have an episode about demands to detransition.
Corinna. So I still consider the art show a big success. We've had a lot of requests to view the art, so I've been giving private tours. We have a group of parents coming. I think they're coming from as far away as Sacramento, so that's like a 2-hour drive to come see the show tomorrow. Parents of a trans-identified kids group. So I consider it a success.
It's the only show of its kind that I've heard of.
I think so.
First, you mean?
Well, but currently only. The first and
yes.
only.
And I hope there were some people offering to help me bring it to LA. So I'm in talks with those folks. The hardest part, of course, is finding a venue, especially now that the vandalism has happened. I don't think it's going to be easy to find a venue. We'll have to find an owner that's willing to do it, I think. So I'm excited about that. I mean, I have so many other projects too. I'm sort of a chaos agent. Like, I'll just come up with an idea and then I'll be like, oh my God, we gotta do this idea. I mean, that's how the whole name Women Are Real started, was that I wanted to stamp money. One of our members, we have a lot of awesome older lesbians in our group that have this like wealth of Bay Area lesbian history knowledge. And one of them was talking about how they used to stamp money that would say gay money or lesbian money. And I was like, oh my God, we got to do TERF money. But I wanted it to be a website so people could go to it and figure out what I was talking about. And then we spent some time looking at all the websites, and it had to be focused on the United States because there's plenty of stuff focused on the UK. And I couldn't find a website that was very, very simple. Like, what if you know nothing about this issue? And I was like, fine, I guess we're going to have to make a website. So then we had to pick something short enough to fit on the money. So we picked Women Are Real because it was short. And so we stamp money all the time now. That's pretty fun activity. But that's why the whole name and group started. It wasn't like I had this grand vision that we were going to do an art show or that we were going to do protests or that we were going to do letter writing campaigns or anything like that. It was just like, oh, we're going to – the Dana Rivers trial was over and what should we do next? And I was like, we should stamp some money. So that was our like next activity after that. So
that's, you know, if I had some of that money that was stamped, I know where I would spend it.
Where?
There's a place in Urbana called the Art Co-op.
Art Coop, the Art Coop.
You can pronounce it however you like, Mina. The Art Co-op has the sign in its window that says "No TERFs," and Nina and I have taken some photographs in front of that sign.
Oh, I've seen those. Yes.
With me slapping my ass in front of the sign, and I've gone in and talked to the owners once or twice. But wow, if I had a bunch of money that was stamped, it'd be in my case, it'd be even better if it said TERF money on it, because
yeah,
the sign says no TERFs.
Yeah,
I'd spend it.
We could do, you know what? I'll send you some
pennies.
send money.
I can't stamp pennies, but we could do TERF money too. You'd have to spend it in places where people understand the word TERF and what it means.
Oh, they do at the Art Co-op.
There you go. Well, it's pretty fun. It's a nice way to do kind of a fun activism activity that is somewhat anonymous, and you can spend the money at places like restaurants or something where you're not necessarily interacting directly with someone, or you're in a big group and you're putting a bunch of money in. So that was one of our first activities that we ever did, was the Women Are Real money, and that's when
it's such a good idea.
Yeah, it's a great idea. Do you encounter people in the Bay Area who, if you use the word TERF, they're like, what is that? I've never heard that.
For sure. Most normies don't have a clue. Now, a lot of people do know what it is, but yes. Like, most of the parents that I interact with on a daily basis in for my kids' school, they don't know the name. It's only sort of online people or very sort of activist type people. Mm.
There is this sign at the Art Coop that says no TERFs. It's been up for several years. And I am trying to file a official complaint, a discrimination complaint. And the officer that I talked to at the city had not heard the word TERF before and is trying to understand what it means. And it's actually just opening this whole, it's much more complicated than it initially seems, because the first draft of the complaint is like, Ms. Paley identifies as a TERF and therefore is discriminated against by this sign. And I'm just like, well, no, I don't identify as a slur.
Right. What if it was a, what if it was a more common slur? What would they say?
I don't know. I asked, but I don't think that they.
It's a strange.
Yeah, it's a strange thing. And then, of course, like if I say there's we're an in-group, right? Like, yeah, you know, it's my turfy coven or whatever. You know, my Twitter bio says rolling level turf because somebody called me that once.
I remember.
But there's just such a big difference between us calling each other that and the sign at a business saying no TERFs.
Well, this reminds me, it's always applied selectively. I don't know if you remember this, but a little while ago, there was an American TERF and she has these business cards that say American TERF on it. It's Jay Thomas on Twitter. And she went to Office Depot, Office Max, they're the same company, to get them printed, and they refused to print them.
Yeah.
And I was so mad that day. She's in, I think this was in Illinois, I'm in California. I made a card that said punch a TERF with like the trans flag on it, and I went to Office Depot and they printed it. Oh, no problem. So I made a little stink on Twitter about it, but the thing is, like, they wouldn't print when we wanted to claim the word for ourselves. They won't print it. But if we print a violent message against us, then yes, that's fine.
Now, those were different locations, right?
Sure. Yeah. But to me, it was like, I wonder if they had gone to that location and printed with a trans flag and printed punch a TERF, if anyone would have said anything.
I should try that experiment here. Or actually, Karina, you should, because you're less recognizable. But yeah, we should go to a print shop here and see if we can print a no TERFs card with the trans flag on it and then come back to exactly the same place.
And print like hug a TERF. Somebody else was trying to get that started, like print hug a TERF and print and punch a TERF and see if they'd print or something like that. But it just, to me, it's like it's the symbolism of the whole movement. We are not allowed to talk about ourselves the way we want to. We can't call ourselves women. We can't call ourselves TERFs. Like, but if someone else wants to call us a TERF, fine. That's fine. But we aren't allowed to have our own language and call us and advocate for ourselves as a sex class. So the TERF is a tricky word. I don't know if you're going to be successful in this. I think it's a tricky word because not that many people know about it. And then also, it seems to be applied selectively as a slur. And then we've claimed it for ourselves, so.
Do you suppose that most of the normies that go to the mall where the art co-op is and they see that sign that says no TERFs, that maybe they think that the store's just run out of them?
They have run out of them.
I wonder if, though, that makes them... I think a lot of people will be like, oh, that's some bad thing. And they don't really think too deeply about it.
See, I think that many people know what it means, even if it's vaguely. And that what the sign is saying is women shut up. Like, if you're a woman and you're even thinking about talking about sex-based rights and concerns, here is a reminder to shut up.
Yes, yeah, certainly.
And the fact that it is a slur, it's just this, it's a kind of threatening sign at the Art Coop because the word is associated with all this violence that's done to women. And women in our town just get reminders all the time. So it's like, oh, are you thinking about it? You like walking, maybe pondering, maybe you're going to talk to someone about this. Oh, no, there you go. There's your little reminder to zip it.
Well, I guess that's the same effect that the vandalism on your art show was meant to convey.
Right. And I think for the people who don't fully understand it, like I tried to contact some local art critics to see if they would write about it. And these are people who go to like local shows. They're not super huge, but they go to almost every local San Francisco art show. They take pictures, they post on Instagram. And I contacted one of them, a few of them, but one of them actually responded back and was like, oh, that's so terrible. What gallery is it? You know, and I tried to explain a little bit about it. And then he said, oh, that just sounds like too complicated for me, is what he said.
What a coward. What was his name? You don't have to tell us.
But just like just with me explaining, trying to explain the issue, just like what happened, he was like, oh, that's too complicated. But thank you for telling me about it. But we do plan to host some more public forums at the San Francisco Library about free speech, about freedom of the arts. And that is something that we're working on right now.
Well, I would be in large support of that, however I can.
Well, hopefully we just submitted our first application to screen a documentary about free speech and have a panel. So we'll see how that goes. But we got motivated through the vandalism of the gallery, but also through the Davis Library event that happened, where some of our members were there when they shut down that event.
Yeah, could you explain that just briefly for anyone?
Sure, the Davis Library, there's a woman there, Beth Bourne, who's done a few. That was like maybe her fourth or fifth library event. And this one specifically was about men and women's sports. There was a young woman, a former collegiate athlete, talking about her experience. She was the first speaker talking about her experience of having men in women's sports. She did not directly talk about any specific person, but she did use the word biological male to refer to men that are in women's sports, and the librarian shut the whole event down for misgendering, saying that it was against the state of California law, which it's not. So they held the event in the parking lot or outside the library, but it was that event being there. I was not there, but the members of our group that were there were extremely frustrated and angry about the situation. And so that's why we started thinking, okay, we got to do a library event in San Francisco.
Now, so that librarian, his name was Scott Love. And I wonder, do we know anything about whether or not Scott Love was reprimanded or fired, or whether there's any sort of complaint or legal action that's happening against the county that operates the library?
I'm not fully aware of all the twists and turns of the legal situation, but I do know that there are lawyers involved and that they were filing for some sort of injunction to be able to hold the event again. It's complicated right now by a series of bomb threats. So this is still going on. There are bomb threats being called on the library and the schools multiple times a week, as far as I understand. This is still going on.
Related to this issue?
It's, you know, this is a confusing thing. No one knows. The FBI, the cops, they can't figure out who's doing the bomb threats, but people are pressuring Beth to stop talking because it is clearly her fault that the terrorists are terrorizing everybody. So the local journalism is all saying basically that Beth needs to shut up so that the bomb threats stop.
Beth, don't shut up.
So we're basically negotiating with terrorists now and letting terrorists run our lives. It's unclear who, like, what side those bomb threats are on. You know, who's calling it in or why they're calling it in. But the local press has decided that it is the fault of one singular woman speaking out for women's sex-based rights that is causing the terrorism. she's like one of the bravest women I know. Speaking of bravery, man, she is like in there in Davis, basically one woman show there. I think she's just in the middle of it right now. Basically, the mayor has said that she needs to be quiet. The police chief has said she needs to be quiet. And the local press have said she needs to be quiet.
Scumbags.
Yeah.
All of them are scumbags.
I don't understand how people can look at this issue and say it's the woman's fault for saying she doesn't want men and women's sports. That's why. And I understand the frustration. Like, people's lives are being inconvenienced. And, like, people are scared to drop their kids off at school because of all these bomb threats. So I understand the frustration and the anger, but I do not understand how it can be this one woman's fault. I mean, some are even saying that, like, you know, they're trying to insinuate. They're like, oh, well, I'm sure Beth has nothing directly to do with the bomb threat. And I'm like, why would she be issuing bomb threats? Like, this is not helping her cause at all. So, in fact, there was sympathy for her and empathy for her in the community about the initial shutdown of the Davis Library before the bomb threats were happening. So the public opinion turned after the bomb threats.
And after the media did nothing to support her.
Right. Yeah. I mean, just the framing of the issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. Davis is extremely. It's a small college town, but extremely like pro trans. So.
Actually, my town has been compared to Davis, Urbana-Champaign, the Davis of the Prairie, or Davis is the Champaign-Urbana of California.
Okay, so you are like. The first Beth born.
I'm alone in my town. And there are women who have gotten in touch with me who support me quietly, but none of them will speak out in public. Mm-hmm. None. I'm completely on my own for speaking out in public. And I hate it. I hate, it's just been years and, my contempt for cowardice is not going away. I struggle increasingly to forgive people for being cowards. It's getting harder.
I understand. I have great respect for you, Nina. I have to say, I don't want to fangirl out too much, but the two of you were instrumental in my coming to a full understanding of this issue. When you're caught in a liberal bubble, like, there was about a year and a half where I had pretty strong feelings about women's sex-based rights, but I thought I was a bad person for having these thoughts. I mean, that's a long time to think that, but I was like, I am a terrible person. I am a transphobe. And actually, your podcast was really a breath of fresh air. I was like, okay, it's okay for me to think these things. Like, I am not a bad person for thinking these things. I know it sounds silly that I would need, now I don't need that, but before when I was caught in this idea that I needed someone like Corinna to talk to me about the issue and agree with me on the issue. And then I was like allowed to have my own feelings about the issue. That's a terrible way to think, but I'm just saying that that was what I was caught up in, that kind of thinking process. So your podcast was... In fact, I remember the Grace Lavery when it came out, and I was like, oh, I'm finally going to hear the other side, because I had been looking for the other side. Like, for probably a year, I was looking for the other side to address these issues. I was like, surely they've addressed them. I want to hear the other side. And I was like, finally, I'm going to hear the other side. And then I listened to that podcast. I was like, oh, I'm right. Like...
I gotta tell you, Nina was so upset the day after we did that recording, and she was like, we don't have to publish this, we can just delete it,
because Grace was talking such nonsense. Or
yeah, I was grossed out, and Corinna had vision. Corinna's vision went further than mine, and Corinna was like, no, this is good. It's good that we did this. This is good and important. And Corinna was right. And ever since then, I have been so eager to talk to people that I might find abhorrent.
I went on the this long walk. I remember exactly when I listened to that episode. I went on this long walk and listened to it. And I listened to it twice. I was like, okay, maybe I missed it the first time. And so anyway, thank you for having that vision. It was extremely helpful for me, and I'm sure for other people. But see, you have that show helped create the art show. So, you know, there you go. You never know.
We did it, Nina.
Well, yeah, and you're clearly a badass. So I am very happy to have played some small role.
Thank you. I feel like the women that I'm around in this group are such badasses. Like, we've had Julie Lane. She has come out with her full real name, spoke to The Economist, spoke to local news stations. We have an author. She just published a book called The Unexpected Penis in our group. She's...
Oh, yes. I know of her. I'm friends
just,
with a friend
I'm
of hers.
Surrounded by these women, and I would never have met these women if not for this issue. And the other thing I love about our group is that we have 50% of us are same-sex attracted. So there's a strong lesbian, and straight woman kind of camaraderie. And I'm like, yes, this is straight women should stop hanging out with gay men and they should hang out with lesbians, because it is so awesome. Cause they just bring such a great energy to our group and ground us in a way. And I'm just so happy to have met, and especially they're keepers of this history that nobody is telling. This is another project I'm interested in. So we have all of these lesbians, and of course, nobody is telling their history because they stood up for women's sex-based rights. So they're completely excluded from their lesbian community or any sort of LGBTQ archive or lesbian archive. So all of their knowledge of activism in the 80s and 90s is being lost because they are excluded from all of these histories. So that's some...
You know, what's incredible about that is that even some of these activist groups now are going back and retouching photos that were originally taken in the 1980s and 1990s to change the signage, to put things like trans rights or human rights on signs that never said those things.
And I was going to say that Sheila Jeffries has done.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's there. It's just, it's like, it's sort of excluded from the mainstream historical. So anyway, that I love that about our group. I feel like I feel more courageous when I'm with them and inspired by all of them. And they come from such different backgrounds. I used to think, oh, could I tell it? Like when we get together for our happy hours, sometimes we haven't met people in person. So we're always trying to be like, oh, is that a TERF over there? Like, is she part of our group? And I realized you cannot tell what a TERF is. Like you cannot. They're all...
You can always tell. Look, if you ever see a transsexual woman lying on the ground and there's a woman who has a boot sitting on that poor trans woman's neck, that's what a TERF looks like.
Yeah, that's right, of course. But
oh, I see it all the time. By looking up and seeing Nina there wearing
that's
her
right,
beautiful
my
red
boot
boots.
Is on Corinna's neck, and that hot pink blood is just spilling out.
It is, and then you make me lick the boot in order to stand back up, and that's the most humiliating part. Well,
you do it because you're a turncoat tranny. And I would personally love to hang out with lesbians, particularly lesbian feminist lesbians, turfy lesbians.
Yes, it's great. I wish
aren't any here. Where I live, the lesbians I know, I actually know one lesbian who's a surgeon. She's a doctor. I think she might be a surgeon also, but she gives cross-sex hormones to teenage girls. That's the lesbian scene here.
Well, it is here too. It's just the dissidents. It's just the heretics, which turn out to be the interesting folks. But yeah, that is true here as well. It's terrible. When I listen to these women's stories about, I'm really curious. I think it happened in San Francisco way earlier than other lesbian communities. I've been asking when did the men first appear and how did it go? this one woman told me this story. She said she came to the Bay Area at around 2002, and she had this normal strategy because she lived all around the states, that she would, like, you know, go to a new town, she'd look up the, like, lesbian potluck meetup, and then she would go to there, you know, and that's how she would find her community. So she came to San Francisco in 2002, and she, like, looked up, there was, like, some lesbian lunch, and she rides up on her motorcycle, just super hot on her motorcycle, right? And she said it was just all men. It was like, there were like three women, and there were just, and she said it was like, almost like she thought she had gone to the wrong place, and that it was like your first day dressed as a woman, because it was just like men very poorly dressed. She rides up on this motorcycle, thinks she's going to meet all these women, and then she's like, what is going on? And then she found the organizer, and she goes, is this the lesbian lunch? And the woman's like, yeah, mm-hmm. And then she just backs out of the restaurant. And so it was already full on in like 2002 here in San Francisco.
That was right when I left San Francisco.
Ah.
I left in 2002. But I was very far from gender critical back then. I was all sex posy and a couple autogynephilic partners, but I didn't know what autogynephilia was. I thought it was all like fun and transgressive, and then that they were trans and stuff. It took a long time for me to wise up.
I have some similar stories. Like, I definitely was sex positive. I mean, I think I trace it back to, you know, just the time and the era that we were growing up in, but also my father pulled me aside when I was like 12 to give me like a sex talk about boys. And he said, this is like the full thing that he said to me. He's like, I just want you to be aware that men have sex for pleasure and women have sex for love. And I was like,
oh.
And then I went, well, you know what I said is I'm going to prove you wrong. So then I spent like 15 years trying to prove my father wrong, right? So I was definitely the sex positive 90s in San Francisco.
Yeah, I tried really hard to be that way also. I thought that I was, because I did not like being so vulnerable. I just was not going to accept that. And of course, part of being all sex positive was I put my body through hell. Because, you know, I'm not just emotionally vulnerable, but women are physically vulnerable to penetrative sex. And I had tons of infections and health problems.
I'm just very lucky that I never, I put myself in some dangerous situations. And I'm just extremely lucky that I was never assaulted or raped. But there are some fun, I mean, I did learn how to enjoy sex. I mean, I do love, I am a selfish lover. I demand a lot of attention from my lovers. But in the end, yes, I enjoy sex a lot more when I'm more aware of my own femaleness and not trying to like disprove some misogynist wrong about how women enjoy or do not enjoy sex. I think, well, most women, this is a cliche, like we come into our own in our late 30s, like early 40s, into our, like, into what we really want in bed. And so I can't fully blame my father for all of it, but I definitely think that I was like, I had a lot of internalized misogyny and, you know, was a tomboy. And, you know, as I said, I changed my name and cut my hair real short. I definitely would have been one of these girls trapped in this, in the trans. And that's probably one of the reasons I feel so much for these young women. When I look at myself, my middle school pictures, where I changed my name, cut my hair, I thought I was going to be an astronaut and go to Mars, and I was never going to have a relationship. If you had said, hey, there's this way that you can escape womanhood, I would be like, yes. Because one of the reasons I went into the STEM fields, I was good at it, but two, I was like, oh, well, women are told they're not good at it, so I'm going to be good at it, basically. So that's part of why I feel so strongly about this issue, probably, is I see myself in a lot of these young girls, which is, I know, is not new. I know there's a lot of women like that, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I would totally be doing that. I would be going by a male name and cut my hair, my beautiful long locks I would cut off. Oh, wait, no, I did.
I shaved my head down to my, when I was 19, like down to the skin, not just like buzz cut, but like shaved it. Wow. Because I wanted to look like Sinead O'Connor. But it turns out Sinead O'Connor is just inherently beautiful. And when you shave your head down to the skin, it does not mean you're going to look like Sinead O'Connor. Partially in a rejection of womanhood, and also because I thought I would look really like Sinead O'Connor. I'd look hot without being a woman, you know, without look like trying to be a woman, but still look hot. And I did not. I have a bumpy scalp, it turns out. And my mother was devastated. She cried. So that was my story with cutting my hair. And I regretted it.
I buzzed my head in San Francisco after watching the movie THX 1138. Because they all had shaved or buzzed heads. And I was like, it's time. And you know, my hair was blowing in my face and just generally being annoying. So I did it. And I loved it. And I did a comic about it. I got called sir a lot by people who were clearly not paying much attention. And I got hit on by cute lesbians. And that doesn't happen now that I'm 55. But then I haven't buzzed it either. It's just short. It's not buzzed.
I liked it after it had grown in about like an inch and a half. Like the naked scalp, not a good look. But the little bit of hair, I really liked. It was probably my favorite haircut. But then I couldn't replicate it the way it grew in. So I just let it grow. Basically, I'm lazy. A lot of my beauty regime is motivated by laziness. Like if there was a gender, a lazy gender, that would be my gender.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
Yeah, lazy gender.
We need to make a flag.
There is.
Except, you know, who has the energy
who has
for
time?
That?
Too lazy.
That would be
worse. You're lazy and you can't maintain your feminine looks. Why aren't you a trans woman?
Oh, that was another favorite episode of mine, the one where you had the bio trans person on.
Oh, yeah, Kikomi.
Yeah.
I laughed through the whole thing. That was so funny.
We had some people reply and say, I don't know if this person is taking the piss or not. Like, I don't know.
Wow. Yeah, I guess humor, sarcasm and humor can be hard sometimes, but it seemed pretty obvious to me. But I liked how she maintained it through the whole, I think there was like one moment she broke the fourth wall, but like she maintained it through the whole episode. I was just laughing very hard. I followed all of them on Twitter. So
yeah. Biotrans or trans. I'm
yeah,
biotrans.
I forget. Biotrans is valid.
To assert that.
Jay, I was telling a friend of mine about what went down at the show with the vandalism. And they asked me a question that I didn't really know how to answer. And I wanted to ask you while I still had the opportunity. The art that was displayed, my impression is that there was nothing particularly political about the messaging of the art, at least not necessarily on the trans issue. It could be art from any woman that had been affected by some sort of cancellation. But that was just my impression. Can you tell us a little bit, maybe a survey of what art was in the exhibit?
Sure. I mean, it's actually an amazing art show beyond all of the controversy. So most of the art, there's one explicit political piece about the trans issue. Mm. And there's one pretty explicit piece about sex work. Then, I mean, Nina's comic book, I guess, I mean, I don't find it that explicitly political. So the first, one of the first pieces I purchased that sort of motivated me was Letitia Key's piece. And it's called Women Revolution. It's a woman holding her fist up, and she's known for creating art in her hair. So she sculpted her hair into a woman holding her fist up. So she's holding her fist up, and the woman in her hair is holding her fist up. She's from the Ivory Coast. very outspoken about her gender critical views. But the piece itself was just a positive piece. And there was the Lordi's pieces were part of her project called Metamorphosis 100, which is 100 portraits of detransitioned women. So there were some portraits of women, but not explicitly, again, political. These are just portraits of women. They are all detrans women. Mm-hmm. And those are so powerful. I really loved those pieces in the show. Laura Becker, funk god Laura Becker, she had a piece in the show which was about, it was her self-portrait revealing her mastectomy scars. It's a really powerful piece. I commissioned that piece from her. She proposed it. I was concerned. I mean, it's a very vulnerable piece. And I said, if you can really ground it conceptually, then, and she did, she wrote like a wonderful description about her piece. And I think it's a powerful, powerful piece. And there's Nina's pieces, it's entitled Hole, which Nina, you can talk about it. I feel a little embarrassed talking about your piece in front of you, but it, what I love about your piece is it's about a woman discovering a hole in her abdomen. And she sort of over the sort of eight frames becomes playful with it. And so it can kind of seem like you're missing something from your body, like perhaps a hysterectomy or you're going through menopause. And it can be a time of grief, but it can also be a time of freedom or liberation or joy in your body. So I don't want to put too much into it, but Nina, if you wanted to talk about it.
It's on my blog.
Yeah, so that, anyway, I like that piece a lot. And Melissa Gwynn, she's a local artist from UC Santa Cruz. She's a professor there. She had three pieces in it. She had a piece called Judith Donald Butler Trump, which I loved. It's a portmanteau of her, of Judith Butler and Donald Trump, and it's an exploration of why some people aren't cancelable. Like, why didn't Judith Butler get canceled? Why didn't Donald Trump get canceled? And sort of talking about that piece. And then she had a stop motion animation. This might be a little political. It was an egg with woman in it. It's a really wonderful piece. And then the woman kind of disintegrates into man. And then the man kind of goes away. And then it says non-man. And then it says, are you okay? Basically, like, are you okay with this? Of woman sort of disappearing. And then even man disappears. And there was, so the famous artist Birdie Rose has the most directly topical, like, piece. I wanted one sort of in-your-face piece in the show. And she has a lot of wonderful art. But I picked sort of an obscure piece of hers that was a self-portrait of her as the Pope. Because somebody had said something online about her being the Pope with all her stickers and you can fuck off. So she has a picture of her as the Pope with some of her stickers. And some of the stickers are like political, like no men in women's prisons.
I think Sinead O'Connor would have appreciated that.
Yes. I kind of thought about Sinead O'Connor with the Pope there. So I liked having like one sort of off, like really out there piece. Amy Ichikawa, who runs Women to Women, her aunt is in the show. She's a lesbian that was sort of on the forefront of digital art in the 80s and happened to do a lot of pieces about women's sports. She was, I think she won a medal in the gay games in the 80s. And one of her pieces, this vintage poster from 1985, is about a track meet at CIF. And CIF is the organization that overruns all of the athletics, K-12 athletics in California. And we've done, our group specifically has done a lot of protesting and speaking at their meetings, protesting at their events around boys and women's sports. So I thought it was perfect that she had these vintage posters that she made in the 80s. For CIF. So that's in the show. So I don't know if it's explicitly political, but there's some conversation happening there about like a lesbian making art and being very like pro woman sports. And then the organization that she used to work for now, like, lets boys into women's sports. We have a local piece by a local artist, Bev Talbot. That's a woman, a collage of a woman in lingerie and sort of kind of falling down. We have a beautiful piece from the Australian artist Pearl Red Moon. It's a gorgeous wedding gown for a woman to marry her garden. It's gorgeous, beautiful textile piece that she was excluded or initially excluded from the Australian Wearable Art Festival for her views. I think she went to a Let Women Speak event and then they rescinded their invitation. She had already started making the work. So she, of course, had already invested time, energy, money into making the work. It's a very complex, delicate piece that must have taken her a long time. And it's beautiful. So I love that we have a lot of different aspects of womanhood in the show. And I like that we had a wedding gown in the show. Even if it was a wedding gown to marry your garden. Then there's another piece by Candio. She's an artist in the Pacific Northwest. And it's called Censor Me Harder, Baby. And it just says Censor Me Harder, Baby. And there's like a woman. I love this piece because she originally made it in the 80s to talk about when the right was trying to suppress certain music. Like they were putting, the moral majority, they were putting labels on music saying, yes, you know, parental advisory. It seems so quaint now, but I remember like Dee Schneider testifying in front of Congress, I think in 1985 about this issue. So she initially made this Censor Me Harder, Baby painting in the 80s. And then she redid it for this, for sort of the sex-based right of women, you know, Censor Me Harder. So I like that piece a lot. And Rosie Kay, who's an extremely famous choreographer dancer, has a piece called, it's not called Adult Human Female, it's called Adult Female Dancer. And it's about a 20-minute solo piece she made during the pandemic about being female, being a dancer. It's a very personal piece.
So do you have a video monitor?
Yes.
In the space?
Okay. Yes. I think I covered
Claudia Clare.
Oh, Claudia Clare. Oh, sorry. Claudia Clare has, now she's known for her like huge like vases. There's no way I could even afford like a 3-foot tall vase, nor could I ship that all the way from the UK. So I found a pot she had made about like 12 or 13 inches in diameter that says "We're Women." And it's a woman, actually a former sex worker, talking to a reporter who called her a sex worker. And he's like, she's like, "I don't want to be called a sex worker." And he said, "Well, what should I call you?" And she said, "We're women." And then there's all in the hair of the woman, there's all of these names of like different names, like prostitute, whore, all the different names used for women.
And that's a pottery?
It's pottery. Yes.
Wow.
Right. Yeah. It's a, it's actually, I used that for the cover art for the show, for the poster.
Well, gosh, I want to have a chance to see this. I want you to get a space in Los Angeles and I want to come check it out.
Awesome. I would love, I mean, if anyone out there knows of a space, doesn't have to be, I mean, I can make anything look like a gallery. So if anyone knows.
When is the show closing?
October 15th.
You could take it to Denver.
Shut us down earlier.
Take it to Denver, where our talk got canceled, but where there's going to be the GenSpect conference and also we're going to be in Denver.
Denver is an easier place to find a venue than LA.
Well, I don't know. Our talk got canceled.
don't contact the Denver Press Club. Nina and I got banned.
Yeah, definitely don't have it at the Denver Press Club, but. Somewhere else.
So frustrating. Every time somebody gets canceled, I just get so angry. Even if it's like a little thing, like when Aaron from Transparency Podcast got kicked out of the conference, I got so angry I ended up flying him into the Trans Health Summit in San Francisco so he could ask his question there. I was like, I think anger is a good motivator for me. Like, and when I feel like somebody's been wronged, I get really angry about it. And then I get like, and I'm also a very like sideways person. I think I do things just sideways, like stamping the money or doing the art show. Like, it's not fully direct.
You're a subversive.
Subversive. Maybe that's what it is. Yeah.
That's what you are.
Oblique. That's oblique strategies.
Okay, yeah. Because basically I like to have fun too. So there's a lot of amazing work that people are doing in California around like laws and policy. And our group is like calling the governor's office all the time and going to visit Sacramento. There's really amazing, serious work being done. But my gift is not that. You know, I can support that, but my gift is more like chaos or art shows.
I can appreciate that. If people want to learn more about the art show or about some of your subversive tactics, where should they go to learn more about you?
So the art show has a website called Acceleration Space. So if you go to accelerationspace.org, you can find out more information about the art show. I also have a website called womenarereal.org, which explains our basic philosophy. And then my Twitter is pretty much the only writing I do, which is at Women Are Reals. So it's Women Are Real with an S. There's somebody who already has Women Are Real, and it's an anti-porn. They haven't posted in maybe 6 years or something, for a long time, but there's another Women Are Real.
Excellent. I have to go check out the art show website. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It doesn't have all the art on it. It just has, you know, so you won't be able to see all the art. I do want to document it. I haven't gotten around to doing that yet, but you can see the artist bios, and some more information about it.
I definitely want to.
Yeah, me too. Sorry I couldn't be there. It's funny because the schedule conflict I had that kept me from going to San Francisco, turned out I didn't go to that thing anyway.
Oh, it would have been fun to have you, Nina, at the show. We had 3-4 artists at the show.
Yeah, it's the only show I've been invited to in a long time.
Oh, and Exelancic, wait, Exelancic was a last minute addition. So she, the last minute we got her in, so she's also in the show with her piece that is on her Twitter. It's like her little Twitter picture. It was the original of that.
I have a feeling that this show is going to be on the road and it might make a couple of stops around the country. I just have a feeling.
We'll get it, maybe. I mean, if anyone out there knows the space, I'm willing to make it happen.
Well, make sure to send Jay a DM if you can help her with this effort.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for putting on this show and stamping money and thinking and talking and rounding up badass women.
Well, thanks for having me on. I enjoyed myself.
Likewise. All right, TERFs and trannies, thank you for listening.
Bye-bye.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening to Heterodorks. You can support us by visiting our page at anchor.fm/heterodorks or by supporting Nina Paley at patreon.com/Nina Paley. You can also support us by writing a review on your favorite podcast site, such as Apple Podcasts. Thank you.